Hi, and welcome to the Passionistas Project podcast. We're Amy and Nancy Harrington. If you enjoyed listening to the show, please consider becoming a patron. Just a small donation of $1 a month can help us keep the project going, and you'll get rewards like buttons, access to premium content, and invites to Passionistas Project events. Today we have a very special episode of the Passionistas Project podcast. Our interview with American contemporary artist Lynn Evola was so powerful, we decided to just let Lynn tell her story without any interruptions from us. Since 1992, Lynn has created the Peace Angels Project, a mission to reduce the number of excess weapons on the streets and transform the metal into inspiring angel sculptures. The angels stand as life-affirming, powerful symbols of peace. We truly hope you're as captivated by this story as we are. So please welcome to the show, Lynn Evola.
Thank you.
What are you most passionate about?
The thing I'm most passionate about is human beings cherishing life, just overall. The human race is a one-generation species. That means every single thing that we decide we are lasts only a generation. But basically, if you treat your children a certain way or you teach them a certain thing, they turn around and they teach it, that's it. And in my life, I've studied war. We can go into lots of reasons, but I've studied it deeply and the translation into a peaceful world and what that means. And in cherishing life, it's about that exact thing. Like here we have the human race and we have all kinds of ways to destroy it. I call it monkeys with a toy. Every time we create something, like say nuclear power, we spend two generations using it to destroy each other before we actually settle down with that and find out the positive things that could be brought out of that invention. So in cherishing life, it's more like the absolute beginning of it, the very base of it. Like we talked about various ways to disempower human beings, but I try to spend all my time thinking about how to empower the human race. So I created the Peace Angels Project, and it was November 2nd, 1992, when it kind of all basically hit. I had been told since I was 4 years old that I had this huge mission, I was going to be this great artist, and people would just fall out of the woodwork, different races, different sex, all different time periods for about till I was 37, so 4 to 37, many, many times. And I had no idea what that meant. I just knew that I would rather make art than breathe. I was drawing at 2 years old. I was selling art in grammar school. You know, I was having art exhibitions by high school. One of six people accepted to Chicago Academy of Fine Arts out of high school in the whole Chicago metropolitan area. One thing right after the other. You know, the art teacher who was educated in New York. When I took his class, I went to his gallery. They took his art down and put mine up. So it was this talent that was there, right? And I would have been happy just to do that. There's no question. But at one juncture in the 70s, when I was at San Francisco Art Institute, because I went to Santa Clara University where my uncle was the dean, which I loved, and then I went to San Francisco Art Institute. And when I was there, in the 70s, of course, right, we find out about conceptual art, taking the notion of art all the way down to the grain of sand. I was mesmerized. I loved it so much because it was what I thought from the start, which was art was the thought. It was the concept. Everything else from there went on with your talent. Okay, that's great. You know, I've been working on it for a while. But nothing took the place of doing art performance in the 70s, and I had a blast. I was one of the most well-known conceptual artists then. I worked with lasers, did big art performance in San Francisco, all the way San Francisco to San Jose. I loved it, but I couldn't make a dime. So I had graduated from San Francisco Art Institute with my BFA in 1976 and had art performances there before I left and then just went on to the galleries. But I was sitting there thinking, well, I wasn't painting and drawing, which usually that's what I would sell. So I became a stockbroker and I became a commodity broker. And I went into my other love, which is business and economics. And I always felt very, very strongly, like from day one, that the artists that we know of them because they could exist. And that meant that 98% of them knew about money. knew about commerce, how to deal with it. What do you do? So it was like if you were looking at a college degree, I had a major in art, 100%, but a minor in business. Always loved it. Then I did an MBA, which I got a perfect score. So I had this kind of, you know, combination. And I did start making physical art again and having shows in Paris and shows everywhere. And also at the same time, you know, continued the business side of it. This went on, and then in 1987, I now had a beautiful little son, my gorgeous son. Oh, Jason was born in 1983. And by 1987, I was selling a lot of art, right? Because now I had him too. I was married, but I had him too. So I went to a library, and this woman came in, and I was all dressed in art clothes, of course. And I'd always bring people to the house to sell art. And she said the same thing that all those people had said to me for years. And it really pissed me off because I didn't know what she was talking about. I was just happy. I love making art. So when she said this to me, she said, you know, I can't tell you anymore, but I have a good friend who's a psychic and she could tell you. Now, I didn't like psychics at all because I had a grandmother who I felt manipulated the whole family with that sort of thing, you know, so it took me a couple of minutes, but then I went over to see her and I said, what in the world is this? And she said, well, there's good news and bad news. And I said, okay, what does that mean? She said, it's going to be extremely hard, but also everyone on earth is going to know your name. And I looked at her and I thought to myself, and I'm waiting for the good news because I'm an artist. If no one knew me, it'd be just very good, be fine. 3 years later, my life started to change enormously. And 5 years later, I moved down to LA. So after having a tremendous amount of exhibitions in San Francisco at that time in London, I had an instinct to come down here. And when I came to Los Angeles, this beautiful friend of mine, Joya Delaney, is a healer. By then, I'd kind of softened a little bit. She was instrumental in me seeing some things that I needed to see. And when I came down here, she said, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. Because I lived in San Francisco. I loved it. And she said, why? And I said, I don't know. I said, I have a really strong feeling. It has to do with Martin Luther King, Chicago. You know, it had all these, like, reasons, but I just knew. She said, I want you to see this woman who sees angels. And I said, Joya, some people see leprechauns. I'm not into this stuff. I don't really want to see. I don't want to go. And when I went to go see this woman, it was November 2nd, 1992. And I always say that was the beginning of the Peace Angels Project, humbly speaking. I saw seven angels for 2 hours. By the time I was 40, I'd read every major Bible on earth. I read everything on science I could find, every Bible, every religion. And to sit through something that I actually saw myself, because no one could convince me about anything if I don't see it myself. And just that way. And basically in this 2 hour experience, they let me know that if I didn't do what basically I had signed up for before I was born, that they couldn't guarantee humanity would continue to exist because of their addiction to violence. Now the problem with all this was that my feeling inside, I knew it was right. I didn't know why. I surely didn't have any of the details, but I knew with every fiber of my being that this was on purpose. It changed my entire life and didn't always make it easy. And I think that at that point, that was the point that my courage had to step up. And I had my son who was 7, almost 8, and I was more protective of him than I should have been, I was. So I wasn't taking any of this lightly. I had 6 exhibitions up between San Francisco and LA at the time. And after that, I couldn't even return a phone call from a gallery. I couldn't do it. I couldn't even return their call. I had to delve very deeply into what became known as the Peace Angels Project 2 years later. I had to sit there and I had to stop. I had to write, I had to draw. I created the first sculptures in that first 2 years. I had to move back to San Francisco after doing a tremendous amount of research in LA of what this would be. And it was the rough road. Miracles would happen, right? But because it was such, the path was so new, those open doors were right next to cliffs. It was rough. when that first happened, I was living in North Hollywood. When I came down from San Francisco, I had a contact here. And like I said, it wasn't easy. But also then Jason and I moved to an apartment in downtown LA, a loft. And a month after we moved in, this family moved in next to us. And this turned out to be someone who worked for the city of Los Angeles. And I was in the middle of a vortex. And that's what I loved about that moment. I was in the midst of an artistic vortex. I didn't know what it was. I wasn't even going to try to make sure that I had a clue, but I knew it. I could feel it. And so this man, you know, and his wife, you know, we all talked, and I said, listen, because the angels had said to me, 12 angels in Los Angeles, one in Washington, D.C. And I didn't know what that meant at all. And I said, I think I'm supposed to figure out in Los Angeles where the cultures are and where the story is. So he sat down with me. I still have this writing in my archives of all the major organizations in Los Angeles, like maybe 20. Father Greg Boyle, the Greek Orthodox Church, the First AME Church, I mean, Crossroads School, all these people that, heroes, that were doing the heroic work in LA. So from day one, I took that information and I had to move back to San Francisco and I started writing what became known as the Peace Angels Project. With the sites here, the echo sites in different parts of the world, the weapons. My two promises to myself were that, number one, I would only use authentic weapons. I used to say any moron with a blowtorch can melt down a weapon. It's metal. It's not really, like, nobody cares. Nobody should care. And the other thing was that I would break down the weapons to the molecule and turn them around, which I figured out in 2013. If somehow you realized that you had the power to make a difference in humanity, you'd want to look at that. You'd want to see, well, how could I? Now, whatever was going on, I was an artist, right? So I wasn't a political activist or a community organizer. I was about material. And that I knew. I knew material. So I had never taken a sculpture class. I was never interested. I'm still not a sculptor. It took 2 years to write the concept of this project as a great work of art. No matter what comes from it, it is a work of art itself, the Peace Angels Project. I started to sit down with myself, right, as an artist, that first 2 years, figuring that what I had to do was get real weapons. That meant bringing in relationships, law enforcement, government. I had to figure out how to take those weapons and pivot them on their head. Like I said, any moron can make something out of metal. There's a lot of crap, right? A lot of crap out there. And quite honestly, swords to plowshares is as old as humanity. It's not news. So if I was going to dedicate my life, which I hold very dear, then it had to be worthy. It had to do that kind of good. So I thought to myself that I had to take the most destruction weapons, the most horrible, through the most difficult sources, so it meant something. And then I was going to have to transform them into something that wasn't just beautiful, but something that inspired people to change their mind and their hearts. It had to be that powerful, or I wasn't going to spend 5 minutes, let alone my life. My life means, I mean, that's it. I've got one. So that's what I set out to do. I researched the different communities. What made an impact on me was that in Los Angeles, it's like the United States of the United States, right? Because people came from the East Coast to this landmass. No one is from this landmass, no one. The Native Americans that came in have their background all the way to Genghis Khan and before. Genghis Khan came through the other way. So all this land, these people came to this landmass. So that means that every single group that came here brought their grudges. And who has grudges? The people who are most like you. So you see in the world with all these places that to me were these acupuncture points of violence, were violence among people who are most like each other, not most different. And then you take those people, send them to the East Coast. Now you've got people coming from the West Coast. Where did everybody land? Los Angeles. So when I started going around here and researching the different grudges and the different organizations and communities, it was with that in mind of doing the sculpture, the 11-foot sculpture, which is the number of the angels here in Los Angeles and what I called an echo site in different parts of the world. Now, the most interesting piece and why I feel so it's so important for me to come to LA now is that when I was sitting there in 1993 and 4 writing where these sites would be in LA and where the echo sites would be, these source grudges overseas, one of the peace angels that I configured was called the Renaissance Peace Angel. I had researched that Sextus V was a pope, had ridden into Rome right after the Crusades, and I'm Italian. There's some Jewish in here too, but I'm mostly Italian and French. And so that, you know, that whole piece resonated to me. And when he rode into Rome, it was torched, it was empty. And what he decided to do was create obelisks throughout Rome. And that became the official beginning of what we know as the Renaissance. I mean, remember, I have like 100,000 years of studying art. So I decided that the Renaissance Peace Angel would go to a place called the World Trade Center in New York, which I had only been to New York twice for like 5 minutes each. Don't even ask me what made me think that that was what I would do. So in that time of writing the Peace Angels Project and trying to figure out, okay, fine, I can't, you know, I mean, I've since figured out how to use weapons in the two-dimensional pieces. Sculpture, I never even took a class. I used to teach anatomy because no one else taught anatomy at the Art Institute. And even though I was a student there, I would teach a class because, you know, nobody had it. But I never thought I would use it to make sculpture. After this experience happened, where I saw the angels, of course I wasn't talking much about it because I thought people would just think I was nuts and what's the point. But I did tell one of my best friends, Catherine Cook, who was an art dealer and curator in San Francisco, and she brought me to Piero Mussi, who owned the Foundry in Berkeley. And when I told him the full story, he said, get to work. And I said, Piero, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never made a sculpture in my life. He just started crying. He said, just get to work. We'll give you an assistant. 6 months later, I had 7 3-foot sculptures completed. I brought in the head of the Italian museum, and he started crying. I was apologizing. I've never made a sculpture before. He was crying and goes, I have never seen such beautiful sculptures in my life. There was the Mexico Peace Angel, the Jerusalem Peace Angel, the Celt Peace Angel, the Korea Peace Angel, Africa. I loved those sculptures deeply. After I got the waxes done, and everything was very different than most of my life. It was very measured. I think I'm still very much like that. And I followed my instincts of where I needed to be. And after a couple of years of writing, you know, people say, no, I wrote the Peace Angels Project. It came out of lightning. But once I got everything in place, one of the biggest pieces that I had to do was that promise to myself that I'd only use authentic weapons. I had researched that the most difficult and powerful law enforcement agency in the world, basically, is the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. So I didn't know anyone. And it took me 5 years to be able to be in front of them. But in April 1997, a few things had occurred. I had finished the Renaissance Peace Angel. I finished all the other sculptures in bronze because I didn't have the weapons at the time. And Crossroads School helped me to bring my son down here from San Francisco. His father died. You know, there was certain things that occurred that made me free to come back down. So when I came here, we were going to install the Renaissance Peace Angel at Crossroads School because again, I made it, but where would it go? It had to mean something. So I came down, Jason was with me, and I started the steps of figuring out what the Peace Angels Project needed to be. And in April 1997, two major things happened. Well, three. One is my contacts brought me to Sheriff Block, and I told him, I said, I need 45 minutes. His secretary had said, even the president gets 10. All I could think of was Muhammad Ali, how I had to be there with him so that he knew that we were the same, just two human beings. And he had just started his rebar program, and I had just, you know, come to him with something else. What I could see is that these law enforcement agencies were already destroying weapons. It's not rocket science, again, because if you've got metal, you recycle the metal. But the thing was, no one knew about it. And even in his making rebar, no one knew about it. It would go into infrastructure. It's in buildings and, you know, bridges and roads. It's not news. But that problem is it's not news. I wanted it to be news. And I knew I needed to step out of myself to make a public statement about it. So he not only gave me the first weapons, but he also came and opened the whole Peace Angels project to the world publicly in April of 1997. So Sheriff Block was very substantial. And he gave us the first weapons medal, which were guns from LA. I had made relationship with this organization called Peace Missiles that gave me the first titanium and stainless steel from nuclear that they had gotten from Russia. This wasn't US yet. And I felt very strongly, and I'm so happy I did, the Renaissance Peace Angel, that was like the keystone. And it was made of bronze, which was beautiful, but it wasn't weapons. So I had the same foundry in Berkeley make a plaque, but I wrote a poem that was etched on the front, and they took Sheriff Block's guns, broken weapons, and I designed the outside of it. Once they made the mold, I said, now take those guns and melt them down and pour the plaque. In April of 1997, there were people from Los Angeles government that said later they had driven to meetings in LA and turned around and came back because everybody was in the audience. It blew my mind because every single television crew covered it and it was on the news everywhere. I mean, it was on every single station every day for a week. We had letters from New York, from Archbishop Tutu in South Africa, all this stuff, and it really blew my mind. But from my end, they put the sculpture on this hideous piece of cement, like 5-foot piece of cement, so 3 feet on a 2-foot under base. And they absolutely had to, because you couldn't put the sculpture on the ground. But I kept looking at that base going, God, that's a hideous base. But again, everything after that happened in 1992, I would look through a little bit different lens. So at that time, the Beverly Hills and LA police departments would take youth at risk to the Peace Angel in the middle of the night to talk about making better decisions, making a better life. And then during the day, it was in the lunch area of Jack Black and Kate Hudson going to school there. It was exactly where I wanted it to be for now. There was one man here, Frank Cullen, who had been the right-hand person to Governor Brown, not Jerry Brown, his father. And he just fell in love with the Peace Angels Project and what it could be and got me to Shanwick Public Relations in Washington, D.C. But at the time, he wasn't able to raise the money. Quite honestly, in his defense, the world didn't have the listening for it, truly.
We're Amy and Nancy Harrington, and you're listening to the Passionistas Project podcast and our very special interview with Lynn Evola. Visit her website, peaceangelsproject.com, to learn more about Lynn and her powerful mission. Now here's more of our interview with Lynn.
So I stayed in New York. I was in there in New York, and I fell in love with a man who I married, Daniel Peabody Smith. And as a wedding gift, he gave me Richard Rubenstein at Rubenstein Public Relations in New York. And I ended up moving back to New York. That was June 2001. July 2001, I met Richard Rubenstein. We all know what happened September 2001. And it was Richard and Daniel, because it's not even comprehensible the amount of pain we all went through. And they begged me, they said, Lynn, please get the Peace Angel from Crossroads and bring it to Ground Zero. And I said, how can I do that? I mean, I'm from California. How can I take the Peace Angel from Crossroads School when people on those planes were headed to California? So we all went round and round, but they said, please rethink this, please bring it. So ultimately, we brought it. Beacon Movers brought that Peace Angel, and they brought it with the cement base. They brought it across the country. Beacon Movers paid for it. They closed Canal Street. They put it in front of Nino's restaurant that was feeding the firemen, police officers, and rescue workers 24/7. Now remember, I'm a conceptual artist at the core. So I had some friends bring me some black marking pens. I said, I never liked the cement base. So I signed the base and I handed it to everybody else. Everybody else started signing the base. So for the year that it was in front of Nino's, firemen, police officers, rescue workers would say, sign the base. But the most important thing that I didn't even know until the night before we had the unveiling. My son told me that when he was there, he said, "Mom, they used to say to each other at the, you know, at the horrible digging up of the worst things in the world, right, at Ground Zero, they didn't know where to go because it was so hazy. They were starving, you know, they're hungry. They can't figure out where to go. It's, you can't see your hand, right? It's very poisonous." They said, "Find the angel." It just seriously made me cry. Because to me, that sculpture became a peace angel because of the experiences at Crossroads, because of the experiences at the World Trade Center. That's when it became a real peace angel, not just a sculpture. And that's the high bar that I have for all of them, is that they are not just, you know, it's not a sculpture that you just make and thank you very much. I don't even like sculpture. But it's an object of grace that incorporates humanity, that is made of the things that we kill each other with. That's what I mean about cherishing life. It's not which political party, which sex, which color, what religion. It's, do we have the grace and fortitude to take ourselves to the next level? You know, the angels had said a lot of things to me that I couldn't let go of. And one was, put more emphasis on the peace side so that human beings will continue to exist. I thought that was the most dire thing I'd ever heard in my life. It wasn't ending war or stopping the killing. It was, put more emphasis on the peace side so human beings will continue to exist. I was horrified. For years, I was horrified. That peace angel then, after Nino's was put into storage by some people who didn't know, who lied to me, it was like I entered a place of darkness for a few years. And it began when that peace angel was taken out and the people who stored it put it outside instead of inside. And then my husband Daniel died, basically from the toxins from 9/11. And I used to call him my oasis because he was just, you know, this huge man. So it was a great loss. And then these people came in that decided they were going to take all my art in the Peace Angels Project. I don't want to go into any of these things, but to say that it was all written. It was all written. So it wasn't even outside influences. So when all that stuff happened, I decided even more so to focus hard. By then, my son was in college, so he was good, right? And I went back to Sheriff Baca, basically had become a friend by then, and he said, "Lynn, enough. We're giving you the weapons," 2010. So they gave me 1,000 weapons. Then the NYPD gave us more than 1,000 again. Then the LAPD gave us 10,000. You know, I started making relationships with the companies that were the metal recyclers, right? Because Sheriff Baca brought us to SA Recycling. I didn't have those relationships, but I started making them because they would do that for us for free. They'd destroy the weapons and then we would get the pieces and we'd keep them for creating of the art and the sculptures. So after a few years of this, you know, I told them, I said, "Look, I need the nuclear." Because by then, again, I had realized all the people that were lying to me for their own agenda. I had to figure out the metallurgy in spite of everything everyone was saying to me, which I did. And the sculptures and the monuments and what they would mean is that they had to be bright and shiny. You had to see a reflection. To me, the whole Peace Angels Project's about reflection. The reflection of your soul all the way to the reflection of seeing yourself in the art and remembering who has the responsibility to make a peaceful world. It's everyone. So once we started to make, I started making relationships, we got the nuclear relationship. And I got 100 barrels of nuclear stainless steel. So things nobody on this earth had ever done before now. But to me, it wasn't a big deal because what was the big deal is to turn these into the monuments to save people's lives. And I'm very meticulous with what I do with the Peace Angels Project, hopefully with everything in my life, but especially with that, because everything matters. And with the relationships, I had to still wait because the National September 11th Museum in 2005 was as big as this room. It was just a person, Jan Ramirez. And John Whitehead, who was the CEO of the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, that's where the billions of dollars went in after the World Trade Center. And he had known my husband Daniel. And he didn't know Daniel had died, but right after Daniel died, John White had asked Nino Vendome, where's Lenny Bolo, where's the Peace Angel? So he contacted me, and I went to the museum, and Jan Ramirez said, Lynn, you know, we'd like to have the sculpture for the museum. And I said, well, of course you should. Why? Because didn't I write that in 1993, that that's where it went? Also, it was a real peace angel. It needed to be for the people. So I said yes, and then that whole thing happened with the perpetrators. And for years, the attorneys helped me, even Jan did. All these people helped. And by 2013, we got the peace angel back and all my art, and everything was taken care of. But here's the funniest piece. In 2015, when I went back to New York from San Francisco again, John Childs, who is the chief conservationist at the National September 11th Museum, we had just gone to see it, and my storage company that I worked with had helped me hold the sculpture and keep it safe while all this other stuff was going on. And so we had gone to see the sculpture, and as we're leaving, he said, hey, Lynn, he said, it was really good that you didn't give the sculpture like you wanted to the museum in 2012. And I was just horrified. I said, what? I mean, because every ounce of my being was trying to get this mess handled so we could get the sculpture to the museum. I said, why? He said, because in 2012, when Hurricane Sandy came, all the pieces that were on the first floor were really in the basement. So there were slits open. They hadn't finished the museum, so all the big pieces were put down there. The trucks, you know, the big metal and everything. So the Peace Angel would have been in sewage for 3 months, pushed against fire trucks and metal. The cement base would have dissolved. It would have been gone. I just couldn't breathe, basically. So in 2015, the National September 11th Museum started its three-year process in conserving the base, which had lost a lot of names because of that storage guy who, you know, didn't know what he was doing. They found chemicals to bring some of the names back. Amazing. They did a beautiful job restoring the sculpture, which now the patina on it matches the walls of where it's standing at the museum. It's stunning. And when they finally called me in July and said, okay, we have a date, which they actually didn't have a complete date for another month, but close enough, we started putting our work together to get that completed. The Renaissance Peace Angel, they told me, would be installed October 22nd. So what that means is the movers who have to move tons in an environment where they can't scratch a hair scratch on the ground. So they came in, and the sculpture was like a sarcophagus. It was in this glass box, and it started to move in. And I watched these guys. I don't remember them going to the bathroom or taking a break from 8 o'clock at night till 4 in the morning. And there was myself and three of the curators there that I said, do you always let the artists come in? And they said, we never do. So I was really honored. But they said, they don't have much art there, really. They have, you know, things that mean something for the museum. So I watched them. They put the cement base. Then they took the crane and took the sculpture and put it, reunited it with the base. It was very tearful, right? So we're all standing there. All of a sudden, they put the grate around it. Okay, I totally forgot. I mean, this is a museum. I basically have spent most of my life in museums. I should remember. And then they put the plaque on it. And when I went over and I read the plaque, I swear to God, I almost fainted. Because up until then, it was like, get the sculpture and get the sculpture in so it could do its job. You know, it's supposed to be there for the people. I had never really thought about the impact to me. And all of a sudden I looked down and it says Lynnett Vola, American artist, and goes into my full name. And then the piece that made me almost faint, the one story I had told Jan Ramirez, is on the plaque of how I said that it was going to be in the World Trade Center from years ago. I swear on my life, I couldn't even breathe. So to note, there's only about 100 living artists that have their work in permanent collection in major museums, period. Out of artists living or dead that have their work in permanent collections in major museums, only 3 to 5% are women. I couldn't even breathe. And what I'm hoping is that the Renaissance Peace Angel does its job being in a museum that is about death, that it stands for life. That's what it's for. That's what it was made for. And then circle all the way back now. I was sitting there thinking, okay, you know, that's done. Thank you. Now, where do I go? Do I stay in New York? Do I go back to San Francisco, where my son now is married and has one baby and another one on the way, which, you know, I want to be with them, or come to LA? And I really thought about it a lot, you know, like all the time. Like, where should the Peace Angels Project go? And my contacts in LA had started to call me in September, because we've been looking for the site for the Peace Angel here for years. But we have three areas, three conversations to complete to choose a site for the 64-foot monument with 1 million weapons per monument for Los Angeles. And so I decided I'm going to come here and we're going to hunker down and get this accomplished now. When I wrote the Peace Angels Project and started it here, I would go to the LA County Museum to do the drawings. Again, I'm like, leave me alone, let me draw, it makes me the happiest. So I would go there Friday night, Saturday, or Sunday morning and just draw. And all the major drawings of the Peace Angels were started there at the LA County Museum. There was one small sculpture there that I fell in love with because, you know, I had gone through a divorce and I didn't really take kindly to my son not being with me, but we all know how that is. So I found this one sculpture of this beautiful, sweet angel in the LA County Museum. It's still there. And this little boy, this little cherub boy, was holding on to the angel. So I used that as my initial drawing of what would become the Los Angeles Peace Angel. I would like, as we start to go on now, have a retrospective of just the evolution of the Los Angeles Peace Angel Monument. In the evolution of that design, again, like I said before, Los Angeles is the United States of the United States. Like, if you shook the United States, everybody ended up here in LA. So given that thought, this Peace Angel, to me, was female. Khalifa was California. And it has the Horn of Plenty at her feet, because this was supposed to be paradise for the people who came here. The beautiful plants, the fruit, the vegetables, the plenty. It didn't end up that way for everybody. With the Peace Angel, which I think it's funny about all the trans conversation happening, because when I made the Peace Angel, I wanted a boy and a girl and then an infant that was open, right? Undefined in that openness. And then I, of course, wanted the female. The only thing different is that when we actually create the monument, her right hand will be up instead of down, where she shows that she can protect her children. The weapons on the base signify the weapons. We've lost, I know, about 100,000 kids in LA since I wrote this project, and I don't take it lightly. And then, of course, the city seal. Is it going to be LA or Venice or Santa Monica? But it's the area. In my thinking and thinking and thinking of how to fund the Peace Angels Project, it's very expensive, especially the way I want to do it, because I'll only do it if it's the best and finest art that can be accomplished. It's not a community project or something, you know, that can be taken lightly. The most expensive parts are the art production and the technology to do that. So I was in bed in San Francisco, resting after those tumultuous years, reconfiguring the whole Peace Angels Project, completing the measurements and research on the, you know, monuments, all that. And I was trying very hard to figure out what would be a natural way of funding it. So I was in bed and I see this picture of Richard Branson kissing Archbishop Tutu on the cheek. And I said, that's it. Because since Daniel had died, my design of New York, it included all these people on the base called the Conversation. Because to me, the ideal of the Peace Angel is imperative. It lifts us up, right? That whole part of the throat that opens up with great art when you look up. But also, to me, it was incredibly important that human beings represent to each other. How to do it? What's the conversation? It's all in the conversation. And I had seen that with Daniel for the whole time I was with him. Everything was in the conversation. So that was fine with me. But now I was looking at who was going to be brave enough to give the money to fund the monument. Who would be brave? Who would be courageous? Not the guys that, I mean, I don't mind, but not the people who give money and get their name on a wall or put anonymous. That's fine too. But who would be courageous enough to say, I want to take a stand and stand there in perpetuity for human beings to use me as an example of what I did to make a better world. So I had my project manager work with me on the numbers to figure out how much 18 humanitarian philanthropists would take. And they each had to partner with a humanitarian activist. So Richard Branson with Archbishop Tutu. And Archbishop Tutu doing the job with his life. And then going into an area and saying, okay, choose 18 humanitarian philanthropists who do extreme good. Choose 18 humanitarian activists, like those people, the heroes I was talking about, the Billy Weiss, Greg Boyle, Khalid Shah, Paul Cummins, all these people who I had researched in those early days, plus more, right, that have done extreme good, possibly give them some money as well to go do their work. And that's the funniest piece, is that I understood high, right, from the Jewish background, that 18 was important. But I didn't remember what 36 was. I was like, 36 is kind of a weird number. God said he would not destroy the earth as long as there were 36 just people alive at each time. So that's the monument. They're on stairs. And the one that's interesting about Los Angeles is I kept thinking, all the other monuments either don't have a back or their back is full of wings. So that's New York's wings, San Francisco's a globe. It's no back. But the Los Angeles monument has a back. And I wouldn't feel right putting people on the backside, but I would feel great about using three-dimensional bas-relief to honor people who have passed away that have done extreme good. So on the LA monument, we have two levels that we can do engraved three-dimensional bas-relief of people who have done extreme good. So that's the monument. And everything starts with basically a six-foot size of a human being, and then it's the divine mean that creates the rest of the measurement. And then underneath it is called a labyrinth. The labyrinth has the walk of suffering and the walk of achievement that lead to the Los Angeles of today. And that's where we'll hire researchers to help us get incremental steps on both the, you know, what was good, supposedly good, and supposedly hard, and what creates the Los Angeles of today. And then on the outside of that, there's weapons blocks. It's all made of weapons. Weapons blocks have names of the kids that have died, every single one of them, all the way around. Outside of those names are the patrons, from 5,000 to 1 million each, to help to fund the monument and its care. So everything that I did in my life with art, with business and economics, was all needed, desperately needed, to create the Peace Angels Project, because it cannot be funded like other things. So those weapons blocks for the labyrinth are great, but I can make a weapons block as big as this building. I can use any kind of weapons on earth, and that helps us to fund the monuments and the sculptures. I still want to do the Peace Angels throughout the world and do them at those key places where there's the greatest violence, kind of like acupuncture points, right? But the next step now is the 64-foot monument in Los Angeles. And now I work with Sims Metal Management and SA Recycling. So between my contacts and their contacts, we will ask for weapons, any kind of weapons, to build the monument. Also, I started during the dark days being the only artist that's a delegate at the United Nations in the closed meetings on disarmament. So now I have the contacts to get weapons from all over the world. Now we're at this juncture of doing the big one, because I couldn't ask for 1 million weapons without my relationships with Sims Metal Management and SA Recycling. I couldn't ask for weapons globally if I didn't have the relationships at the UN. I couldn't ask for weapons from NATO if I didn't have the contacts with them. I do now. Right now, what we're doing is making appointments with people to get the site finished. And also, I want to get the relationships with the humanitarian philanthropists that here in LA. And I just know that once we get the first couple, it's just going to, you know, because there won't be a 19th or a 20th. I can tell you, my life hasn't been easy, but I really feel that nothing has happened that wasn't on purpose. And I personally haven't been anywhere since then that wasn't for a reason. And I really think that we're ready to get this monument in Los Angeles. And I think the world has a different listening now. And now when I say I need to make these out of real weapons and destroy them, people listen. So it took me so long to work underground and not be in the public, but now it's ready.
Thanks for listening to the Passionistas Project podcast and our very special interview with Lynn Evola. Visit her website, peaceangelsproject.com, to learn more about Lynn and her powerful mission. And be sure to subscribe to the Passionistas Project podcast so you don't miss any of our upcoming inspiring guests.